Underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester, Vermont, and Saratoga, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a master's degree in English with a concentration in literature studies and an MFA in creative writing. strose.edu/gradprograms.
Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. On November 29, 2007, Joseph Luzzi's life forever changed. His wife, Catherine, 8.5 months pregnant, was killed in a car crash. Before she died, doctors delivered their daughter, Isabel. In the space of a morning, Luzzi became a widower and a father. In grief, Luzzi turned to a pastor, a counselor, his family, but he teaches Italian literature at Bard, so he also took refuge in the words of Dante. His new memoir is In a Dark Wood. The title comes from the opening lines of Dante's Divine Comedy. It's a pleasure to welcome Joseph Luzzi to this week's book show.
Thanks, Joe.
What you detail in this book, how long ago did this happen?
My late wife's accident happened in 2007, so we're coming up on 8 years now, and that's, I think, enough distance from it all to kind of be able to write about it without being in the immediate aftermath. But I also felt that I didn't want more time to pass, because then, you know, as life moves forward and memories of it become more sort of shaped by the distance of time, I wanted to kind of be at that point where I had enough distance, and yet it was close enough to write about it and sort of remember specifically the immediate aftermath.
At what point in the grieving process and in the process did you think that this is something that I can write about and share?
You know, that's a great question. It's the question, really, because on the one hand, it's something that's so intensely personal that it didn't feel, you know, it was obviously something not easy to share. On the other hand, you know, as a couple years went by, I remembered the immediate, most intensely painful aftermath, I felt that I wanted to do something so that other people who'd gone through what I had or a version of it would be able to see themselves in the experience. That I talk about this a little bit in the book. Grief, in my experience, is an incredibly intensely lonely experience. I'm very lucky. I come from a big, loving Italian family. I have a wonderful work community at Bard College. I've got great friends. And yet the process of grieving over my late wife was intensely personal and lonely, to be completely honest. So I wanted to write a book that would open up that experience for other people. And so I had the idea to write the memoir about my late wife's death and the process of recovering from that. But it was too personal. It was too inward. And I almost felt sort of trapped in the pages. And at the same time, I had another idea where Dante has been my lifelong passion. I've been studying and writing about him for almost 2 decades now. I had wanted to do something on Dante for general readers, because he's a very difficult author. You mentioned at the beginning of the show he's beloved. Right. He's also incredibly hard. I realized at that point that the two stories were completely intertwined, that Dante had been a big part of my recovery. I turned to him and his work as I was getting over and coming to terms with my late wife's death, and that it all happened. It all kind of came to a head. The New York Times gave me the opportunity to contribute something to the op-ed page. And this essay was born from that a couple years ago. And I realized at that point, in the act of writing it, that these two stories were one story. And that's really when the book became possible. In other words, the Dante sort of absorbed the intense introspection of the grief memoir, and yet the grief memoir gave my experience of Dante the personal thing that brought it to life.
There is what you put down on a book proposal, And as the title would indicate, it's the intersection between the grief and coming to Dante. But for you, and just examining what you just told us, it was something naturally that you did through the process of going to a writer that you admired and whose work spoke to you. Mm-hmm. And then it's looking back on it that you say, okay, this had a profound impact.
Yeah, and I think one thing you said that's so true is this was the kind of book that, though the idea of bringing the two together was there, it was actually in the process of writing that it all happened, because it was something that, you know, I did, and this, I understood grief retrospectively writing the book. A lot of memories of Catherine had sort of, I had not lost touch with, but they'd become remote and lifeless, because I think grief does that. As you recover, in a sense, you have to distance yourself from the life that you shared with someone in order to carry on. So, you know, the memories of Catherine became spectral, disembodied. Writing the book helped reconnect to that part of my life, and it wouldn't have happened if I hadn't actually sat down and, you know, agonized through the drafts, as they say. So really, the book came to life on the page as I was writing it. The same with Dante, I should say. There's parts of Dante that I'd studied, read, and taught about for, like I said, 2 decades. And yet, writing this book, I understood parts of him that I had never had access to as a scholar and a teacher. Mm. Just to give you a quick example, there's a famous canto in Dante where Ulysses, the Homer's hero Odysseus, gets back to Ithaca. And Dante has him leave once he gets back to Penelope and his son and his father. And, you know, people have agonized over this for the longest time. Why does Dante have him do it? What are the religious implications of this for a pagan to get back to his homeland and then be so restless he goes back to sea? One thing I realized writing this book, and I talked about it, I think Dante was a genius in understanding that once you leave home, as Ulysses did, or Odysseus, 10 years in the war and then 10 years wandering, even when you get back, you are a permanent stranger. That the worst exile is internal. Mm. And I experienced that going back to my hometown, which I love, Westerly, Rhode Island, my family I'm very close to. But I had left home for college, you know, when I was 18 and had not really lived there since. Going back home, my family helped rescue me afterwards. But I felt a profound sense of exile, disconnect from the town that I had been brought up in. And that really helped me understand Dante's Ulysses, that Ulysses leaves Ithaca because he realizes it's not home anymore, even after he spent, you know, 20 years trying really to get back full circle.
Isn't it why, and someone told me this years ago, an old wonderful English teacher that I had, that everything that I read as a student I should read again, because now it'll make a lot more sense, because the world has smacked you upside the head a couple of times. So as we mature during the maturation process, we look at the great wisdom, and of course we're talking about Dante, but any great work, and we can find something in it that can speak to us.
I think that's true for so many books, especially for Dante. You know, I've had the privilege of teaching Dante. I teach to undergrads at Bard, but I've also taught it in continuing ed to some older students. And I realize with them, the book really resonates because, in a sense, if you've been kicked around a bit by life, as Dante has, the book means more to you. Because the book is about loss. The Divine Comedy on the surface, of course, is the story of Dante's journey through the afterworld, his love for Beatrice, and she's his guide, Beatrice, in anglicized form. But I believe now, having written the book and having lived with it, that the real story behind Dante's Divine Comedy is him trying to come to terms with his exile. He was kicked out of Florence, his beloved hometown, in the middle of his life when he was 36, in around 1302, 36, 37, and he never got over it. He spent 20 years wandering up and down the Italian peninsula, basically, and that experience of exile, loss of home, was so profound for him that a lot of the Divine Comedy, I believe the Divine Comedy became his home. He wrote it in Tuscan. That was his hometown language. It's filled with people he grew up with. And Dante's not an easy poet, not an easy writer to get inside of. he lets his guard down very rarely. And the one time he does is in Paradiso 25, where he talks about, should it ever come to pass that this sacred poem, I'm paraphrasing, would overcome the cruelty that bars me from it and get me back to Florence. There I'll take the laurel crown. And you can feel him still after all this time, so desperate, you know, missing his hometown so much. And so as your high school teacher very wisely said, we can understand these books that we love better at different times when we ourselves have experienced similar things. And for me, Dante's sense of physical exile, getting kicked out of Florence, after Catherine died, I felt exiled from the life that I had. I had a life, and it was like I fell through a trap door, and suddenly I was in another world.
And also, it's the life that was to come, right? The life that was to come with you and a family.
Right.
It's not just the relationship between you and your wife that is completely dismantled, but what you've been planning on for months and months of having a child.
And even beyond months and months, in a sense, like a whole lifetime.
You
sure. know, I'd wanted to be a father. It was going to be a dream come true. We were married. I had a child on the way. And then when I lost Catherine, with her loss, my idea of fatherhood also took a serious hit, because the same day that my daughter was born, my wife died. So I suddenly had a child, and yet I was in full grief. And so I loved my daughter, and she was what kept me going. But that kind of instinctual becoming a father was completely, like so much in my life, just drowned in a fog as I was getting over Catherine's death. So much of my life was in place as before, you know, my family, my friends, my work, and now I had this daughter. And yet because of the death and the grief process, it was as though this kind of invisible divider had been put between me and it. And I had to learn how to become a father, and it took years. And it was only with the help, the heroic help of my family, especially my mom, a Calabrian matron from the old school, who was, you know, who'd already had 6 kids and over 10 grandchildren. Suddenly she had a new child to look after, and she embraced it. And, you know, I wasn't the easiest person to deal with at that time, because I was suffering. I was in my own world, trying to get over what happened.
And your daughter is also coming into the world damaged as well. I mean, born premature, and you're worried about that.
I would say that one of the miracles of the whole process, and I chalk this up to the support of my family, was that she had somehow a happy childhood, a happy infancy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
You know, those first 2 years, she was completely buffeted from all the pain, all the sorrow, because of, you know, my family coming in and taking over and helping me. So in a sense, Isabel was insulated from the shock of all that. You know, that's one thing that I can look back on with a sense of relief as the, you know, that she didn't feel the immediate after effects of what had happened when she was in her infancy.
Joseph Luzzi's new book is In a Dark Wood, What Dante Taught Me About Grief, Healing, and the Mysteries of Love. The book is published by Harper. What is it about us, when people go through great loss, grief, challenges, even triumphs, we will often be the quoter. We will say, as so-and-so said, as Dante wrote.
Right.
At what point are you able to, in your mind, when you're the one suffering, when you're the one feeling the grief, are you able to quote those sayings, those lines to yourself to offer comfort?
I'm a reader and a writer. So it's natural that when all this happened, I turned to literature, even before I started writing about the experience. So I read all the books, you know, but a great number of books on people who'd been through similar, the sudden loss of spouse. I looked to literature, contemporary and older stuff for answers. And I think one of the reasons I wrote the book was because I didn't find the answer in what I was reading. I was quoting, and yet somehow I felt my experience of it was different. And, you know, I think that in some ways, grief is the same for everybody. You know, it's a lot of the issues. When I published that piece on Dante and grief in the New York Times, I got an incredible outpouring of emails and letters. And people from all different walks of life somehow saw themselves in what had happened to me, whether it was a spouse, a child, a family member. A lot of people have experienced loss and know exactly what you're going through. And yet, it's also very different for each person. And I felt, let me write something that is quoting Dante and living with Dante, but also can tell the story in a different way that, you know, gives it a kind of sense of, as I write, Dante wasn't a self-help book for me. I don't see him as that kind of author. I think it's too complex. It's too ambiguous, a lot of it. But what it gave me was a sense to believe in something beautiful, a transcendent work of art. And I think that kept me going. And so it's not that I quoted Dante in a sense for specific mm-hmm. advice in given circumstances, mm-hmm. but more the sense that here's this guy who experienced the worst, the loss of his hometown, the sullying of his name. You know, they said, come back to Florence, we'll burn you alive. He knew he was treated unjustly. And so in the first few years after, he actually plotted, with former enemies, to get back to Florence, military action. He was a political figure, Dante. When he finally accepted his exile, that he was never getting back, a couple years after his exile, he sat down and wrote the Divine Comedy. It took him about 15 years, 14,000 verses, poem. In his great despair, he created something beautiful, something transcendent, this work of art that somehow miraculously speaks to us now, 750 years after his birth. That, to me, was the ultimate in what you can do with your grief. I knew it was defining. I knew that it would sort of split my life in two. And I thought, it's not so much what Dante's saying literally, but the fact that he was able to craft something extraordinary, to make something beautiful in his most dire moment. That was inspiring to me. And I think that what I wanted to do in writing the book was to show that it is personal, it is lonely. No one can really help you through at a certain point. You have to get through on your own. But you don't lose the things that you love. And one of the things that I love, Dante, became an example of how, through a belief in art and literature, you can transform what is your lowest point into something profound. And that was, that was the inspiration for the book.
And it's the process.
Yes.
The process of writing the book, the process of thinking about it, the process of working through some of that ambiguity that you mentioned a moment ago that helps, that allows you to have some clarity.
I agree. And with that comes honesty to yourself. And that's sometimes hard in the sense that to really understand someone like Dante who told it like it was.
Yes.
He had enemies and he put them in hell and he put, his friends in heaven. He was a kind of relentless in his pursuit of the truth, so much so that in certain cases, one of his best friends, he actually exiles his best friend's father, Guido Cavalcanti, who's burning in hell. And it's kind of a substitute for Guido, the person he devoted his first book to. So he didn't stop at friendship. And I remember when I was writing the book and talking a little bit about, some of the difficulties that I'd had in embracing fatherhood, my editor said something to me like, well, what are you really saying here? I said something like I was present as much as I could be. And she said, no, what really happened? And I said, you're right. I was absent times I needed to be because I was struggling to come to terms with what it meant to be a father and a widower at the same time. And so writing this book forced me, in the way that Dante forces you when you're reading him, to be honest with yourself, even when it means admitting things that you're not proud of. And I think that, that's all about the process of really living with the poem. Right? When I was a scholar, I am a scholar, when I was a teacher and a writer as a scholar about Dante, you write about it in a certain way. But in a sense, I had to forget a lot of that, to really talk about it as someone who's living with it. The book is written for someone with no prior knowledge of Dante. So I have to imagine someone coming to it without having, read it before or anything. And that means, how is it reaching you on a human level? The way Dante had this sort of courage, I think that's the word we're kind of dancing around. He had great courage as a human being and as a writer, knowing that he was going to write things that was going to, you know, would make him enemies.
So when you have that honest moment with
yeah.
yourself, is it, this is how I felt, and it changes you to a realization that this is how I should now feel? Or is it acceptance of that remains constant? Do you know what I mean?
I do. That's a great question. In other words, is it like, should I take this as a cue to act a certain way going forward, or just accept it's part of a narrative
meaning,
in the past?
Right. This yeah. person is going to go to hell and now they're going to stay there. Or this person is going to go to hell, but now that I've realized this, they can come into purgatory for a little while.
Well, you know, the thing about Dante's Sinners, which I think relates very much to what we're talking about, you don't get into hell just because you've done bad things in Dante. Dante believed the greatest gift that you had in life was free will.
Right.
By that he meant you could do something terrible, commit a sin, commit a crime. If you genuinely repented and did good works to try and better yourself out of it, you actually would have a chance at purgatory. The problem with the sinners in hell, as this great Dante scholar Eric Auerbach once said, is that he said the greatest pathos of the sinners in hell is that they don't change. They replay for an eternity over and over their sin, because they don't take responsibility for it. So the lustful keep, Francesca and Paolo, the two great lovers, Francesca keeps blaming it on love, right? Everyone's blaming it on someone else, someone else's treachery, someone else's wrongdoing. But for Dante, if you admit the sin, if you own up to it, even that means saying that you did something wrong, you do have a chance for redemption. Now, to put it in more secular terms, in terms of me in this book, what I think that meant is you're haunted by the past if you fail to come to terms with it honestly. Once you sort of can admit shortcomings, mistakes you've made, then you have a chance to move on. Because, you know, there were things that I felt guilty about from the grieving process that I was still living with. And writing the book and sort of admitting, you know, just to take this example, that I could have been more present as a parent, mm-hmm. I could finally say, well, look, it was a difficult circumstance. You know, you did the best you could with the means and the things that you had at hand, something that I couldn't say before.
Well, I kept on thinking of this in reading the book, because not that we look for excuses for how we behave in life, but you got a hell of an excuse. If you say to anyone,
right,
well, why are you acting that way? Well, my 8.5-month pregnant wife was killed in a car crash.
Right.
Well, okay, most people are going to be pretty understanding.
But what's hard to communicate to someone, unless you've gone through it, something similar, is that there's a whole set of irrational feelings that accompany grief that, you know, I had read about, I kind of had heard of, but until you live them, you really don't know. For example, there's survivor guilt. You know, why, when someone that close to you dies, even if you're completely divorced from it, you know, my wife was in the car alone, I was at Bard College, you still feel this sense of someone that you love having died when there's absolutely nothing you could have done. But it's that irrational feeling of watching someone very close to you die. So you're assailed by these thoughts, you know, these feelings in the beginning. You could call it survivor's guilt or whatever, but there's a whole psychological, you know, condition that comes with grief that I believe it was Freud who said that grief is an illness, but you can't see it, right? You know, you break your leg, you're walking with a crutch, you have a disease, you're hospitalized. Grief is an invisible illness, and no one sees it. And at a certain point after the immediate, you know, the fallout where everyone rushes to your side, people get on with their lives. It's natural. It just happens. And you're kind of stuck with this thing you're dealing with. And to me, someone who's an intense, kind of hardworking, striving person as I've been my whole life, for a full year afterwards, I felt like I was in a fog. And that is, even in retrospect, hard to kind of for me to understand. I was functioning. I was teaching. I was, you know, doing what I had to do in the world. But you're still kind of in a fog of grief.
Joseph Luzzi's new book is In a Dark Wood, What Dante Taught Me About Grief, Healing, and the Mysteries of Love. The book is published by Harper.
We enjoy hearing from our listeners about the show. You can email us at book@wamc.org, and you can listen again to this or find past book shows at wamc.org. Sarah LaDuke produces our program. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.